Well, good morning to you all. As Coy was saying, I see it's a beautiful day in the Grand Valley today. Sun is out. Birds are singing, ones that are still here. But it's a beautiful day. I have a neighbor who is a construction klutz. Now, I guess that's probably not an appropriate term to use these days, but why don't we just say he's do-it-yourself challenged. Let's just, for the sake of this story, let's call him Dave. Shortly after moving to where we live now, I was hearing this noise. I was inside the house. I heard this noise. It was obviously a power tool. And my first thought was, oh, it sounds like a handsaw, a circular saw that he's using. You know, it was my neighbor. I could tell it was my neighbor. So I'm hearing it, and it's going on and on and on too long. You know, usually when you make a cut with a circular saw, it's pretty quick deal. You know, zing. You know, in fact, you know, some of the professionals, it seems like they go zing and then drop it on the ground. You know, I mean, it's just really fast. But this was going on and on, and so pretty soon my curiosity got the best of me, and I went out in the backyard to where I could kind of look around the side of his house, you know, see what was going on. And when I got out there, I could not only hear this, but I could smell the wood smoke, you know. And, you know, just a little bit before that, I thought, no, I must be wrong. It's not a circular saw. It's got to be a sander, because I could hear it, you know, kind of bogging down and then speeding up again and bogging down, speeding up. So, you know, I went out and I looked at, here's all this smoke coming up from this piece of wood. And I looked over there and I thought, boy, either he has got the dullest blade I've ever seen, or he's put it in backwards or something. And he's just going and going and going and just, you know, really, really trying hard to get that work done. That's when I first had doubts about his manual arts skills. Now, one spring later on, he purchased one of those canopies that you can set out in your yard and get underneath it, escape the sun. It's got the side curtains, you know, so the insects don't get in and bother you. So he purchased one of those, and I happened to be out in the yard, and I saw that he had the framework all together. And he had it sitting over kind of he has a pond area, real nice little rock pond with a recirculating water feature. And we can hear it sometimes when it's really quiet at night, you know, bubbling. It's pretty nice. And I thought maybe I'd just go over and, you know, see what was going on, chat with him a little bit. Now, by this time, I was quite sure he had very little experience in building anything. He had recently bought a metal shed, but he ended up getting a young man to put it together for him. You know, simple metal shed. So I thought I'd go over there and maybe coach him just a little bit, you know, because I didn't want to go over and, you know, tell him what to do, but I kind of had this hunch that maybe he'd need a little bit of help. So I went on over and I saw that the canopy was sitting there over the pond area, and it was kind of, you know, like this. It was on an angle because the ground was on an angle. And so I'm over there. I'm chatting with him. I said, "So Dave, what's your plan here? Are you gonna leave that high leg right where it is, and then, you know, block up the other legs to get it level? Or are you going to dig that one down? You know, what's your plan here?" And he says, "Oh no." He says, "No, it's just fine the way it is." Yeah. So I'm looking at this angle. I'm looking at his house, you know, perfectly plumb. Look over at my place, the shed, plumb. Power pole, fence post, everything's plumb. And here's this canopy sitting here, and it just, you know, really bothering me. But, well, that's Dave, you know. It's not normally windy in our area, but every now and then it gusts up to, you know, 30 miles per hour, a little bit more. And just shortly after he got the fabric on his canopy and stuff, we had one of those winds, and it picked up that canopy, and it flew through the yard. It hit on his brand new metal shed, dented the roof of that, came up against his fence, and I tell you, it was a total loss. Not only was all of the supports, well, not all of the supports, a lot of the supports were bent, you know, like 3/4-inch metal tubing was bent. The fabric was torn. It was a total loss. A few days later, he had it all stuffed in the back of his old pickup truck and was going to take it all to the dump. And I saw that square tubing, and I says, "Well, Dave, what are you going to do with that?" He said, I'm just taking it all to the dump. And I said, "Well, could I have that square tubing?" He said, "Yeah, sure, go ahead, take it, you know." And so I got some pretty good square tubing out of the deal. I could cut it off and make stakes for the garden, so on and so forth. And I've used quite a bit of it by now. There's other things that I've seen Dave do that, you know, make me stop and think that it's, you know, he's got something to learn there. Like watering his lawn in the heat of the day, sun out, you know. Also shrubberies, you know, and you get water on a shrub in the middle of the hot part of the day, and it can burn the shrubbery. And then just recently, right next to our house, he sort of transplanted a ground cover. And what he did, I think he got most of the weeds out of the area next to our house. But he took a shovel, cut out some rounds of his ground cover, and you know, some of them had dirt on them that thick. And then, rather than preparing the dirt in any kind of way, he just brought them over and just sort of thunked them down here and there. And then he put a soaker hose on it and proceeded to water it in. And after about week one of the soaker running 24 hours a day, I saw Dave, and I said, "Dave, do you know that your soaker hose is still on? You know, because it's on the side of the house where he doesn't, you know, come around very often." And he said, "Oh yeah." He says, "I gotta get that soaked in, you know." And so it was about a little. Eventually, it was about 2.5 weeks. You know, I didn't pay any attention when he first did it, you know, because I didn't know it was going to go on forever. But the hornets, wasps, hornets, were, you know, it made a big mud mess there. And so the hornets were really having a fine time there. And it's right where I walk around the house, get to the garbage can, and walk around to get to the car. And so every time I walk around there, there's all these hornets everywhere. And so I finally said, "Hey, Dave, look at this. Here's all these hornets." You know, I put up a trap, you know, right there. And he said, "Oh, okay," you know, and then he finally turned it off. But the latest thing was building a storage spot for his Harley motorcycle. Now, I'm going to try to describe this to you. Our two driveways are about 10 feet apart. And mine's a little bit lower than his, probably 18 inches lower or so. And what he did was he took some blocks about the size of red brick. They're concrete blocks. I think they're really meant for putting an edging around a garden or something, just a mow strip or something like that. Anyway, they're kind of rounded on the end and concave on the other end, so they kind of, you know, fit together long ways. Well, anyway, he stacked those, each one on top of the other. So he built it out from his, you know, and he had to get higher and higher towards mine. And all he did was stack those on top of each other. No backing behind it. The ones that were out towards my place are just sort of sitting there. You know, nothing to hold them together, nothing to back them up from the back. And then he took sand, and the sand came from our huge sand pile that was deposited there when the dam was built. And it was the leftover sand that dam people didn't want, you know, for making cement. And it was everybody in the town can use it. You know, you can just go get free sand whenever you want. One of the biggest problems with it is, and everybody knows this, I thought, was that it doesn't compact very well. And so he filled this three-sided area with this sand and then proceeded to put paving blocks, you know, about, I don't know, 18 by foot paving blocks on it. And that was going to be his place to park his Harley. Well, he did this when we were gone for 2 weeks. And when we came back, after just 2 weeks, it looked like a pile of rubble already. All of the blocks were just, you know, kind of squishy, and, you know, nothing was level. Now, I realize that not everybody is gifted in the same ways. You know, and I'm not really, you know, I'm not trying to put Dave down. I guess I am, but I'm, you know, that's not my purpose. Dave was probably one of the best tour guides at our local dam there when they were doing tours of the dam. He's got a good voice. I think he was a trainer in the military, and just a real commanding voice. And I think he did a real good job there. And when we first got to our new home in Cooley Dam, he was quick to offer his old pickup truck for us to take stuff to the trash dump. And when he found out that, I should go back a little bit here, we bought the house before we moved, about 9 months before we moved. And so we were working at this house, and we were commuting quite a long distance. So we'd get there on the weekend, and we would do a lot of work and then go back home exhausted. But we were sleeping on the floor in the house. I think we had a mat, maybe some sleeping bags. But well, when Dave found out about that, he says, "Oh, no, you can't do that." He says, "I've got this old box, not old really, this box springs and mattress that I'm not using. You got to have it, you know." And he just gave it to us, you know. So he's a very generous person, as well as, you know, has his own good traits. But concerning his do-it-yourself projects, what I really didn't understand was it seemed that Dave never tried to get information that would help him accomplish his tasks. He didn't ever ask for my advice. I never saw him with how-to books or magazines. He didn't ask his friends to help. His father-in-law was a real do-it-yourselfer. I think he was in, you know, some trade of mechanics or something, and I don't think he ever asked him for any help at all. He just tried to wing it on his own inadequate skills and knowledge. Seeing this trait in Dave made me think, do you suppose God ever observes some of our actions and thinks, why don't you listen? I've got the information you need right here in my word. But either you don't see it or you just ignore it. Let's turn to Jeremiah chapter 6 and verse 19. Jeremiah 6 in verse 19. And it says, "Hear, O earth, I am bringing disaster on this people, the fruit of their schemes, because they have not listened to my words and have rejected my law." Not only do we have God's written word, but we also have the Holy Spirit to guide us. Let's turn now to Romans 8. Romans 8 and verse 26 and 27. In Romans 8, verse 26, in the same way, the Spirit helps us in our weakness. We do not know what we ought to pray for, but the Spirit himself intercedes for us with groans and that words cannot express. And he who searches our hearts knows the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for the saints in according to God's will. So even when we don't know what we need or can't express our needs, the Holy Spirit intercedes and makes communication with God possible. If we will let it happen, if we aren't our own worst enemy and block the communication by our stubbornness. I have a little story here that ties right in. A small boy was preparing to build a hutch for a rabbit he had received as a gift. He was so small he could barely hold the hammer, yet he was determined to build the hutch alone. His father gave him the boards, nails, and hammer, and explained how it should be built. Repeatedly, the father offered his help, but the child stubbornly refused. And as the hours went by, the boy's irritation and anger increased. Before long, he was in tears, banging bent nails on boards that kept falling, but still he refused help. At last, in desperation, he leaned the boards against the wall, blocked both ends of the rabbit so the rabbit could not escape, and went to bed. The next morning, the rabbit was gone, the boards fallen. The boy stood silent, looking at the empty area. Then he said, "I guess I didn't want to keep the rabbit as much as I wanted to say I built the hutch alone." Often, we are so intent on being self-made men, we forget what our purpose is in building our lives. God will let you go as long as you like without him. Perhaps when your house finally falls and your treasure is lost, you will forget your pride and seek his help. We were never meant to do it alone. This is why God calls us children. Today I'm going to talk about the importance of listening to God and the reasons that sometimes we don't. And I'm also going to talk about the feast some. Now, I waited too long to start writing this message. I had made a few notes over the past year, since last feast, and found some scripture references. But I was not really thinking seriously about what God was trying to tell me. And although Judy and I were attending a church, and we also attended participated in some group Bible studies, there must have been some missing ingredient. And for me, and I can't speak for Judy, what's been missing is meaningful, deep communication with God. When we do have communication, we have direction and focus and a will and a drive to know what he wants us to do. I've been missing that. I know that now. But up until just recently, I was unaware or just ignoring the symptoms. So when I finally got down to composing a message, my mind was a jumble. I couldn't seem to get any thoughts to go together. I'd prayed for help with this sermon, but until I admitted to God that I hadn't been communicating with him, especially listening to him, I couldn't get started. So how important is it for us to listen to God? Well, it's huge. It's everything. If we don't have a relationship with him, we have no part in his plan. If we are not listening to God, We are likely doing our own thing without any direction, like my neighbor Dave in his do-it-yourself projects. We're going along without any direction. Or worse, we may be listening to a different source. Let's turn to 1 Peter 5, verse 18. Let's turn to 1 Peter 5, verse 8. My colon looks like a 1. Sorry. This will make a little more sense, since how we don't have a 5:18. Okay, in 1 Peter 5, verse 8, be self-controlled and alert. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for something to devour. A lion usually attacks according to the best opportunity. It attacks the very old or the very young, the weak or injured, or one that has strayed from the group. So it's imperative that we stay close and in communication with God. Close to 15 years ago, my wife, Judy, attended a Christian women's seminar in Portland, Oregon. And Becky Terabasi was one of the featured speakers. And I haven't really followed what she's doing, but she was a Christian motivational speaker, written a lot of books, had risen up, I think, from teen alcoholism. But she was a very good speaker. And what she said, something she said, which Judy related to me later on, has stuck in both of our minds to this day. When your spiritual life is in the doldrums, when your prayers seem repetitious and shallow, when you can't decide what to study, when there's no meditation at all, you can usually come up with a lot of excuses. Becky says, forget the excuses. Your spiritual life is suffering because of one of these things. You're too busy, you're too tired, or you're too lazy. Forget all the other little excuses. Evaluate your life. Reorganize your priorities and make the changes that give you the proper balance. Too busy, too tired, too lazy. These can keep us from listening to God. Now, about being too lazy. We oftentimes think of being lazy as a person doing nothing. But unless we're asleep, that's hardly ever the case. We're almost always doing something. But you can also be lazy by choosing to do activities that are less important than when there's more important issues are at stake. Now, we all need to have recreation and diversions. But sometimes I find that I'm working a crossword puzzle when there's lots of other way more important things to do. It's a matter of priorities. A while back, I was listening to a young speaker tell about her memories growing up. One thing that stood out to her was her family taking an annual trip to a resort in Central Oregon. Each summer, she would spend 1 or 2 weeks at this resort in a cabin in the woods, enjoying bicycling, swimming, hiking, canoeing. She went off to college and her summers were taken up with other pursuits, earning money for college, summer classes, some volunteer work. After 4 or 5 years, she was able to get back, rejoin her family at the resort, and while staying there, the memories came flooding back. She realized then how much she had missed it and how important it was to the family connection. Sometimes events occur, sometimes over and over again, and we don't really see the significance or put the significance on them at the time. This young woman didn't realize the memory she was making or the close bond she was forming with her family during those early years. It was just fun for her. Later, with time to reflect and a bit of maturity, she could appreciate the far richer fruits from those days playing in the sun. We as feastgoers can certainly relate to that. The feast cements families and brethren together through the shared experiences, conversations, sermons, group outings, dining. I'm here at the feast this time, this year, with two people that I had met in Greece in 1998. Jerry Steenport and Suzanne Plaza. But we were sitting on a bus in Athens, waiting for more feast goers to get onto the bus that were on other flights. And all pretty much strangers, that Judy and I knew each other. But here we were, you know. And there was other people besides those two. But we picked up a conversation fairly right away. It's probably Jerry. He's got the gift of gab. But we became good friends during that feast. We stayed together quite a bit throughout the tours and stuff. And we kept in contact over these years. And now here it is. We're together again. And what a blessing that is to meet people and to have those experiences together and just to enjoy each other. It was only about 3 years after our first feast that Judy started writing down the year and location of each feast site in the back of her Bible. Later on, I kind of wished that we had put more information in there, like maybe some of the names of the people we met and where they lived, that kind of thing. But you just never know in the beginning what kind of information you think you might want for something like that. When we moved to our new old house, we started fixing it up. It was a fixer-upper. But Judy started taking pictures early on of the you know, the before picture and the during picture and the after picture sometimes. But even though we started at the very beginning, there again, it was that you don't know what you should be taking pictures of always. And even though we took lots of pictures, we find later on that some of the before and some of the during pictures are missing. You know, we didn't take them. Can always take an after picture, right? But so you just don't know what you need at the very beginning. But some of the best memories don't fade away. We lose some of the facts, the dates, the places, names, but I'm sure we all have images of places, feasts, activities, stuff like that, that just keep going around in our head. You actually can't seem to get them out. It's like you think back about a particular place, and bang, there's those people, and you know the surroundings, maybe the condominium or whatever it is like that. So like video clips are just part of our mind, and I suppose you get old enough, maybe they'll go away, but you know, for the most part, they stay there. I can see myself and our family in a small apartment in Squaw Valley, and I think we were invited up to this apartment within walking distance of the meeting place between services. It was probably on the first day, and we had two services, but I can see the apartment I can't tell you who all the people were there. I can see a couple of them. But I can visualize the apartment, you know, the coffee table, the couch, you know, a couple people's faces. And, you know, it just comes back to me. It's just right there. And I also remember another feast memory was standing in a parking lot helping to direct cars on the island of Kauai. And I was wearing a clean plastic garbage bag with a hole cut in it, and it was over my head because it was pouring down rain. I'd never even heard about doing that before, but, you know, what an innovation. You know, I've used that since. But it kept me from becoming soaked. Yes, the feast is fun. It's full of memories. It's delightful, refreshing, uplifting, rejuvenating, educational. But it's not only for us. Let's turn to Matthew 5, verse 14 through 16. Matthew 5, verse 14 through 16. And Jesus says in Matthew 5, verse 14, "You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, and that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven." Notice it doesn't say, let your light shine 24/7, 365 days a year, except at the Feast of Tabernacles. No, it doesn't say that. I know I often get caught up in my own enjoyment and forget to even think about all of the people out there who have no knowledge of God's plan for the future. Now, it's been a pretty rough year, or maybe 2 years, or for some 5 years out there in the world. It's been a rough year for some of us. There's been loss of jobs, loss of savings, loss of home. We need to share the good news. They need to hear it. After all, the feast pictures a far better future, a time of prosperity, a time of abundance, a time of peace and security. But what can we do? What should we do? Well, I think that each one of us ought to ponder that question individually. We might be surprised by a multiple of fresh ideas that might come from that. Two things, however, that I've seen to make the feast gathering more visible to non-attendees are these. A service project was done. An agreement was made with the national parks in Hot Springs, Arkansas. And this was made ahead of time before the feast. But agreement was made that the church would spend about a half a day picking up litter in the national park. And so that was kind of an interesting way for us to let our light shine to the community. I don't know how effective it was, but it was one way. And a friend of ours long ago had told us that during the feast, she always left a really large tip wherever she went to eat. Back then, I think probably tipping was at about 10% was the norm. And I don't know if making large tips here in Grand Junction by our 100 people would make much of an impact. But like that boy who was out on the beach throwing starfish back into the sea, and somebody came along and said, you know, you're being silly here. There's so many of them that are beached. You know, you can't make a dent in in helping that population of starfish. And he throws one back in and he says, yeah, but it made a difference to that one. So, you know, when we were in Squaw Valley, when the 8,000 people came into Squaw Valley during the time between the summer season, when the campers and all were there and tourists, and between winter ski season, those people probably took notice, you know, if people were high tippers. So whether or not it made a difference in their lives, I think we might have, made a message, got a few people's attention. The least we might do is to think ahead of what we might say if somebody asks, what's going on here? What kind of a convention is this? That's what Coy would call getting our head into the game. Enjoy the rest of the feast. And in the coming months, don't you let the cares of this world crowd out your relationship and communication with God.